Okay, good evening, everybody. This is the Truth and Justice for Germans Society meeting conducted on Zoom. And it is the 24th of March, 2025. And we've finished our business part of the meeting and just have a little bit of presentation to give and hope this is of interest to the world. So the first item on this. Oh, and I should just say my name. My name is Monica Schaefer. Welcome, everybody. We had somebody contact us via our website, which is truthandjusticeforgermans.com. And he was asking me, this is a few months ago, why did we delete his comment that he had left under the tribute article to Ursula Haverbeck? And I was very puzzled by this. I didn't think I had ever seen that comment. So there was some kind of a mix-up, technical mix-up. But this led to a further conversation about a project he's doing. There's a website called findagrave.com. Find a grave, just, all one word, findagrave.com. And he has been putting up either memorials to Germans who died during the 1930s, or they didn't just die, they were murdered. So hang on, I have to backtrack. Why he had tried to put something under the tribute to Ursula Haverbeck, who just died last fall. There's a section there on that website for memorials, and he had put something up there about Ursula Haverbeck, and people could send flowers. I don't know if those were virtual flowers or how that all worked. I'm not exactly sure. So then he was telling me about a project that he's compiling a list of Germans who were murdered by the Jew-inspired communists during the 1930s. And he would like to establish a memorial for the 16 victims of the Beer Hall Putsch. And then his research led to the discovery of 452 individuals murdered because they wanted to keep Germany free from communist Marxist tyranny. So he said that in this meeting, if people know more about Germans who were murdered by, the partisans, the communists in the 1930s in Germany, to contact him to let him know so that he could add to his research. He thought maybe even somebody on this meeting is related to any one of those. Who knows? That might happen, right? So he wrote a flattering a biography of Ursula Haverbeck on the website under that memorial to her. It was deleted one day later, this flattering biography of Ursula Haverbeck, because this is not a thank you, Diane, for your consternation, because that tells me that you're puzzled by that. So this website is not a website that's somebody who, it's a general website, findagrave.com. So it's the general public. It's not revisionists. It's not, historians. Yeah, exactly. Now you're getting it. Okay, so to do a flattering biography of somebody like Ursula Haverbeck, it got deleted in one day. It didn't last. There was a photo up of a young German woman, very attractive, but it wasn't Ursula Haverbeck. He finally got them to take that down, and he figured that the reason they had that up is because they wanted to show her connections to, Hitler or youth or something, or military, whatever, because this woman had some kind of a military uniform on. Perhaps, Hitler Youth, I'm not sure. So just to have some accuracy in these things, right? But then he did write another bio that was more neutral, I guess. And I looked for it. I didn't really find that. I did find the memorial to her, so that was fine. Anyway, that was that item. Did anybody want to ask something, say something? What I'll do is I'm going to send to you, Diane Collins, I'll send you these URLs, the links, and then they could go in the minutes. So if people want to check that out, they can check that out.
Will this include the actual, did he send to you the actual biography for Ursula that he posted that had been deleted? Did he keep it?
I don't think so.
It would be good if he
oh,
gave
I
it to
asked.
you.
I good questions. I asked him for all of that. I really was trying to get him to join us on this meeting. I really tried hard. He asked Diane Collins. I was polite, but really encouraging him to join us and give this presentation himself. But he didn't. He declined.
Because
And
we
then I
did
asked him
publish it.
about that bio. I did. I asked him to write something up. I asked him all these things, Diane. I asked him to write something up, and he declined. So sorry.
Okay,
I
we
just
could
said
get
I
it
would.
out. My
I would.
email, your email, it goes, it would go on our walk and talk. That would get published there. Anyway, okay.
Correct. Correct. Anyway, I did promise him I would do my best to give this information. So I'll send out those URLs to Diane, and then she can pass it out in the minutes. So yeah. But anyway, thank you to Gary for doing this. So if you watch this afterwards, we are very grateful to you, because I will send him the link to our little presentation here. Okay, so anyway, the next item, and this came about after Jeffrey had given a little presentation during one of our meetings here about the German people in your area, Missouri, who had been instrumental in ending the slave trade, right? Or the slavery or whatever. And so then somebody again sent us some information and they say, hey, here's another example of something that the Germans did. And this counters the usual narrative about those evil Germans or those warlike, warmongering Germans, or they're all bad. And so I looked this up and found the link on the Wikipedia link, Moisebach-Comanche Treaty of 1847 in Texas. And it is one of the very few treaties that was never broken. Now, the man, Herr Moisebach, a German man, he had a flaming red beard and he was really well known and respected in those areas. And they created this treaty between the Penateca Comanche, who were very fierce, and it was very dangerous to go anywhere in their territory. They were attacking everybody. Anyway, this treaty was made between, so Moisebach, this German fellow, he was instrumental in creating this treaty between these Penateca Comanche and for the protection of German immigrants who were settlers in the area. Okay, so then the treaty was that each could go into the other's lands without getting killed or molested or hurt. And they respected this, and this worked after a lot of years of a lot of violence, and it never was broken. That's fantastic, don't you think? I think that that guy probably did a great job of being a peacemaker. So there you go. That I just wanted, it's just a little tidbit.
Until our federal government exterminated all the Comanche. No wonder it was never broken. There weren't any Comanches left to have to worry about. And that sounds like something likely our government would do. This was after the Alamo and the war for Texas independence from Mexico and such in 47, as you said. And following other types of narratives that our government, our federal government, purposely would, like you said, break the treaties with the Indians so that they would attack the settlers, because then that would free up the land
so
for
Diane,
for the
this
railroad.
Is a very, that's a very different take on it, but I'm just going to interject here, because we could go down that road, and I don't know all the things that you know, perhaps, but what I do know is that we are being fed a lot of lies about the history of what happened to Indians in North America. And I am extremely immersed in this myself right now, in especially the Canadian situation.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I have done dedicated a show to that, where I reverse engineer the lies that are being rolled out as we speak right now in Canada, and reverse engineer that to better understand how they created the Holocaust lies. And in the end, it is about anti-white, anti-white, anti-white. So this could be another time that we have this discussion. I did have that video that Jim interviewed me on to, and I covered a lot of that, and I would like to still do a part two on that. It could be that there were huge differences in the United States. However, I suspect that there's also a lot of distortions and lies. And I doubt very much that the treaty only wasn't broken because they were all wiped out, like all in one fell swoop overnight. Like, I kind of doubt it, but I don't know.
That's just the nature of our federal government, just saying.
Jeff, yeah, okay. Jeffrey?
Yes, I think this all came about a comment I may have made during our flip side show, number 11, I think it is. And I had been told by a Native woman in Colorado that there were plenty instances where Germans and Natives lived side by side in peace and you know, no troubles. So that might have been the catalyst for that. And so I think there's probably more of those.
Okay, quick note here. Would somebody be able to pen an article about this thing?
About that treaty?
Yeah, because I mean, if somebody could put together something, I mean, a minimum of 500 words, I'd be happy to put it to print.
I only just know what I know from reading the Wikipedia entry, and I mean, that's it. So I haven't done any.
Yeah, was it initially researched that treaty? Was it you, Jeffrey?
Oh, unmute. Jeffrey?
Yeah, I just know what the one lady told me, and then what the Wikipedia entry it was, you know, so there's probably a lot of stuff that hasn't been written down.
Yeah, it would be an interesting little, I mean, I'd love to print an article about, publish an article about, it doesn't have to be super lengthy, but it'd be nice to, I mean, write it myself, research it myself. I'm eyeball deep in other people's work already, editing and publishing. So, you know, but I mean, like, I'm always happy to hear from other people. So if you could write something about, you know, the treaty in Texas between that red-bearded German guy and the local Indians, sure, I'd be happy to publish it and talk about it.
Well, if anybody wants to take that on, please just step up and do it. I know I won't be able to do it. I've just based it on – and thanks, Jeffrey, for remembering how that came about. That is very likely the case that it came about from that show that we did together on the flip side with Monica. Yeah, where you were talking about the Germans and the Indians living side by side in peace. So just, you know, the point of this that I brought this up is because of, it's like the more we can put forward a narrative, a counter narrative to the prevailing narrative that, you know, somebody like, what's his name? The guy who wrote Germany Must Perish, who said all the Germans must be disappeared because they're all warlike, warmongering. I mean, and that is the prevailing narrative still, it seems, in you know, through Hollywood and all the depictions of the evil Nazis, and all the Germans have to go, not just, and it doesn't matter if they're led by Hitler or by a priest, it's just about killing the Germans. That was Churchill, right? And Churchill is still seen as a hero.
Yeah.
So that narrative about the Germans just being evil, nasty, always warmongering, that needs to be countered. And I think every opportunity that we have to counter that narrative is good, is really good, is we need to counter that narrative. In fact, I've seen statistics on countries waging war, and Germany is kind of the most, like, you know, how many years... They never start a war. They never, like, it's, Germany is among the countries where it's the least amount of times that they're in war. When they were in war, it's other people attacking them, right? I mean, World War I, World War II, that's war. But yeah, anyway, so anybody else comment about that before I move on to Vincent Renoir? But it's a good idea. Thank you, Hans, for the invitation if people want to write. And where are you publishing? Is that on the Tool Society? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, I would have to say, you know, you talk about the narrative about German people. I just have to ask, well, who's writing the narrative?
Yeah, exactly. Good point.
We all know.
We know. We well, know, but that's exactly very good point. Who's writing the narrative? Jeffrey?
A good book that I read about that time in Civil War time and Germans ending slavery here in Missouri is Germans for a Free Missouri. And I bought a copy off of eBay. So, yeah, Germans for a Free Missouri. And it's a great thing about how life was back in the 1850s, so.
Well, pen an article about it if you would. I'd love to print it.
All right. I'll see.
Okay.
I'm not much of a writer. But yeah.
All right. Anyway, but thanks for that offer, Hans.
I'm much of an editor, so.
Yeah. You say you are or you're not? You are editing.
I am.
Yeah, there you go. Good. Awesome.
I may not be much of a writer, but I am much of an editor.
Right on. Okay, Vincent Renoir, he's on our agenda because things have been coming across our emails lately. And at first I thought, well, wait a minute, this is old. So thank you, Diane and Jim, for forwarding an article. But the first article that was forwarded, I checked it out twice, checked it out thrice, and it was old. But it was UK something. It was a mainstream something from the UK, I do believe. And then I realized after you sent the second article, which was the Jerusalem Post or the Jerusalem Times, something, but a Jewish mainstream paper. And that one was current. And so I kind of pieced it together that came up for, in people's alerts and the mainstream media there in UK, they just, oh, Vincent Renoir is something new about him. Oh, we'll just pull up an old article and they resent it out. But it was 3 years old, right? So I thought, okay, let's talk about Vincent Renoir. What I gather, and we weren't able to confirm this, so again, I'm going to say this with just a caveat to the listener that I am not certain what his current status is, but this is what I gather. So in early, I believe it was 2024, so over a year ago, he was extradited from Scotland. He had been in prison there, and I have had been in active correspondence with him, and I'll show you some of the things he sent me. It's very good. I revisited that a couple of hours ago. And he was in Scotland in a jail there for things that he had done while he was still in France. He's French, Vincent Renoir, and he works in French. I'm not sure. He speaks a little bit of English, but it's French is what he works in. And, of course, there's big, strong laws in France, and they made law specifically for Robert Faurisson. And under those laws, they have gone after people like Vincent. And he has been in multiple jails multiple times. And he then ended up basically leaving the country and basically going to a small village, first in England, then in Scotland. And he was tutoring math or something. And then one day somebody had ratted on him. I guess, this happens when you're kind of in hiding. And he was just minding his own business, tutoring math, I believe. And so then they picked him up and they threw him in jail. But he says he had a wonderful time in that prison. And I'm going to read you a portion of his letter, but I first want to just recap the story as I understand it. And then he finally was extradited back to France. It took them a while to get that achieved. And I assumed that they would put him right into jail in France, but they didn't. He was basically out awaiting them deciding what they were going to do with him. So these things grind through the courts, grind through the processes. But in that over a year, that time, he was not in jail. So now this recent article from this Jerusalem Times, I think it's called, it says, it basically said that he's been sentenced to a year and 10,000 euros fine. That's a heck of a lot of money. And I guess that's for whatever, his speech, right? It's all for speech about Holocaust and stuff. And so Is he in jail at this moment? That's the part I don't know. And the thing is, he was sentenced to a year now, so presumably they're going to lock him up. But I know that when, for example, Ursula Haverbeck was sentenced, oh, you know, to this, to that, and the other thing, she was through the courts for years and years and years, and always people assumed that, oh, she's in jail because she's been sentenced to this amount of time, now she's been sentenced to that amount of time, et cetera, et cetera. But always there's these processes. And then, in fact, she did go to jail for a 2.5-year stint, but that was once out of all those times that, you know, the process ground for years and years and years through the courts. So is he in jail right now? I don't know. Is there an appeal? I don't know. That part I don't know. But I know from now this paper in Jerusalem that she's been sentenced. He, Vincent Renoir, has been sentenced to a year. Before I read excerpts and show you what he sent me, does anybody have anything that they know more about? Like, Paul, would you know more about that? Or does anybody know any more about that?
No, as far as I know, he was extradited to France and is in jail waiting trial.
No.
No?
Yeah. No. So, that he was extradited to France. You are absolutely right. But he was not in jail.
Oh, okay.
Now he's been sentenced, like now they've decided what to do with him. He's been sentenced to a year in jail and 10,000 euros fine, according to the Jerusalem Times. But I would take that as a yes, that that is true, because they always would like to gloat and, you know, be, yeah, right on, look what we did to this bad man.
They are, the Jerusalem Post is usually fairly accurate. I mean, it's not a overtly a propaganda sheet, you know. It's usually the fairly straight information, so I tend to trust it.
And I know he wasn't in jail during that past year, Paul, because I have seen him in a video working with other people doing some videos that it was something else. I can't remember what it was about now, but I know that he was out. I know that. I wasn't in touch with him personally, but I know that. But anyway, he would draw nice pictures in his letters like this. That was a Christmas one. As you can see, there's candle and stuff like that. Is that showing up? And then he actually sent me a beautiful drawing that I framed and have on my wall. So he was drawing all kinds of things in jail. I got to hold it away from the light. Otherwise, it, you know, just nice things. And I reread letter from him. And oh, and here was another one that he sent in this one. Just nice stuff. So I kind of, oh, and even the envelope, look at that. Nice stamps and flowers and stuff. It was just very, very nice. And he wrote lovely, lovely letters. We actually debated some things. Like, we didn't always agree on everything just because we both agree on the Holocaust. Oh, and before I read out of here, the first thing years ago that he was nailed on is this massacre that happened in a little village in France called Oradour-sur-Glane. Oradour-sur-Glane must be on this river, Glane. And then this is kind of like the story of the Germans always getting blamed for things that other people do. So there was this massacre where over 600 people, villagers, just not soldiers, villagers were brutally massacred. And they blamed it on the Nazis, soldiers. But it was French resistance. And this is from how the Jerusalem Post puts it. But that would mean partisans. That would mean communists. That would probably mean Jews did this. My interpretation. It was not the German soldiers that did this. And he had seen that story. And for some reason, I can't remember what triggered him to look into it. But when he looked into it, he discovered a lot of anomalies. So he really looked into it. He wrote a book about it. He did the deep dive into that incident, had all the proof and evidence. Of course, that's why they lock people up, because they can't counter the evidence. They can only just lock somebody up if they uncover these details and the evidence. So he went to jail for that, to show that it was not the Nazis. Yes, Hans?
Does this guy speak English somewhat?
You know what? His English is, as far as I remember, I think it's quite poor. Some of his videos have been translated, and maybe he has spoken English in some of his videos, but he's as far as I can remember, it's always in English. Actually, my brother Alfred includes some of his clips. He does speak English, but it's not commonly what he does.
Well, what happened when Jim interviewed him, we were supposed to have this lady who was supposed to be translating for us, and we couldn't get a hold of her. So I had to use the Google Translate to go back and forth with him.
Oh, so Jim, did he spoke in French, and then you...
Yeah, that would be tough for me to do. I think he could answer in English.
Yeah.
I think you're right about that.
So it's it's not good, right?
Yeah, French is not my language.
Anyway, so back to Hans there. You wanted to...
Yeah, okay, so you're in contact with this guy personally?
Not now anymore. I was while he was in jail. We had a very active letter writing correspondence. Not all the letters got through because then we discovered, okay, one of mine was missing, one of his was missing to me, and there were some gaps. But we had an active letter writing correspondence, yes.
Could you petition him to write an article for me?
It will be in French.
Yes, I can.
I'm not in touch. I have not been in touch with him since he's out. I wouldn't even know where to find him. Hans,
you have his email, right?
I don't. No. Anyway, let me.
Diane.
Very likely going to have to wait for him to settle into prison. Probably then he'll be. We'll have it probably get an address, hopefully, in some capacity, and then he'll be able to communicate.
I'd love to petition this guy for an article.
He'd probably love to do it.
You could find his articles, too. Like, he has written a lot. He has written several books. He has written, and some of those would have been translated. And he wrote to me in English. I mean, here I am. I'm writing to him in English, and he wrote to me in English. So he has enough ability to sit and write a letter in English, but...
I would love to just have this guy pen an article. He doesn't even have to talk about the incident. He can just tell me whatever he wants to talk about.
Yeah.
Whatever. Get it off your chest. Say what you got to say.
Sounds good, Hans.
What he'd probably do is tell you a story about this village. That sounds like something Alfred would do.
I'd be happy to hear from him if he's, but you know, by the same token, I'd give him a blank slate to just say whatever he wanted.
Okay, well, let's hope that we figure out, like, when he's in jail, that would be the perfect time for him to do that.
Okay, I just want to throw that out.
Thank you, Hans. It's great. It's like, yeah, right on. Okay, so just something here he wrote. I went in five prisons, and he names them. One was in Belgium, then this other one, Valenciennes, I guess that's in France. I think, and then Fleury-Mérogis in France, and Edinburgh. So there were five prisons. He says Edinburgh, am I saying that right? It's spelt with a G-H on the end, but I never know what people say.
It sounds like what is under a saddle, Edinburgh.
Edinburgh.
Oh, sorry, Edinburgh.
Edinburgh, thank you. That's what I thought I've heard, but whenever I see it written, I don't see that, so I have a hard time with that. Edinburgh is the best one, like a holiday camp. I do exercises twice a day, so I take two showers a day, or even three. When I go to the sport field of the prison three times a week, when he goes to the sport prison, then he showers three times a day. Wow. I can read, meditate, write, and draw. Since 2 weeks, I have water paints so I can paint. It's very nice. Prisoners ask me for portraits or landscapes. I even draw for guards who are very nice with me. But everybody is very nice with me for two reasons. One, they can't understand I am in prison for writing books or making videos about Holocaust. In their mind, I am an innocent man unfairly jailed. Two, I am very kind with everybody. Always smiling, giving apples, cereals, pens to help people. If one day someone tells them revisionists are bad peoples full of hate, a loud burst of laughter will be heard in Edinburgh. Yes, hope we shall meet on the other side. I told him we'll meet one day on the other side with Adolf, he says. Hope he will be at the gate of heaven to welcome me. With Himmler and Göring, Best regards, Vincent. That was just the tail end of one of his letters. You get an idea how he wrote and his attitude. He was just always had this very positive attitude. In another letter, he said something about he's just completely dedicated himself to revisionism. Now, he hasn't seen his wife and six out of eight of his children in many years, 12 years, and he said he's just completely dedicated now to revisionism because, and then what, how did he put it? I should find that one actually and just read that part to you because it was very moving. It was very touching. He says like that's all really there is for him, but he does it with such a positive attitude. Oh, I know what he said. He said he doesn't care what they do to him because he knows that he is with God. And, when he dies, he's going to go to heaven or whatever we think of, he's on the right side of stuff. So he's very strong that way. He's fearless and he doesn't care what they do to him. So that's how he goes forward. But, I have to say we had some debates in our letters because he says he's Judeo-indifferent. He's just interested in the facts. And I said, well, I'm not Judeo-indifferent because I know who's doing all this. But sort of, he just had an attitude that it wasn't, he just, anyway, I'll leave it at that. Go ahead, Hans.
Okay, so I would love to have this guy pen an article. If he's not available, we could turn your correspondences into either one or more articles if you like. I would like to print those.
Because that was a nice piece of writing, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. I had to, get up and take care of a little business, but yeah, it's like I think that's cool. I mean, if it's more than 500 words, it could be put together. I'll print that up and turn it into a published article. If it's okay with you, I mean, if you're willing to do that.
I guess I would have to ask him if it's okay with him, but I would think that that's okay if a political prison writes out of jail. Like when I wrote letters out of jail, I then found out afterwards that a lot of my letters got published or put out there. Like, I mean, you did, Jim and Diane, and then I thought, oh, okay. And then I kept that in mind for future letters that, oh, these might be seen by more people than just this one person.
Well, I mean, that's another thing. If you've got letters that you'd be willing to, you'd like published, I'll publish them.
Yeah.
Just, make sure you just, pick something you like.
I could,
I'll
yeah,
publish
I could.
that. I would be very happy to publish, your correspondence where it's like, one set of text and then the response, letter response, that
Or just
sort of thing.
excerpts like that, eh? Like I just read you a little excerpt.
It wouldn't so much be excerpts, it'd be the body of the letter
Okay.
and then the next letter, and then it's like depending on length. I mean, if it I have to look at length too, but I would just say that that would be a good format, because like some of the articles I've published already have like there's the article and then there's like Brian Rue's correspondence, Randall Hilburn's, and it kind of goes down a little ways, one person's corresponding with another.
I really look forward to getting his address, and I'm sure you are too. There were two things I just wanted to say. I wanted to finish up with your and Alfred's program, but there was something that a friend of ours, and I had submitted this to you. It's relatively short. I don't know if anybody knows Trevor Labonte. He's very outspoken. He's been at the Freedom Palooza, and he's a real good friend of ours. And he wrote a paragraph. I thought, oh, Trevor, this is
Yes, please, please, please
incredible.
do read that. I saw that. Please do read it.
Okay, at the very bottom of the truth or rabbit hole, it becomes apparent that he did Nazis are just a propaganda invention used to demonize populist nationalism. The actual historical German NSDAP, National Socialist Party, were nothing like they are depicted in Hollywood films. We call it Hollyweird. No one was ever gassed. Meanwhile, in Russia, around 1914 to 17, the government was overthrown by Bolsheviks, and the true historical record has documented that the new Marxist government was at least 85% Jewish. They were doing the same thing in Germany. There was a shooting war in the streets with communists taking over cities, including the capital, Berlin. Also, they've got headquarters in Munich, by the way, and flying the hammer and sickle flag over them. Then, years later, after Hitler was elected, he campaigned tirelessly for peace. And World War II was forced on him by the corrupt bankster-controlled British government, who responded to Hitler's generous peace proposals with RAF air raids. bam. Yeah. and secondly, I wanted to, Jim put this up on his BitChute channel, those darn Schaefer kids. And I thought, this is so perfect. Both of you have experiences. Both of you have things that you've done. You have a book that needs to be promoted, which we'll be happy to do that. And as well as your 5-minute, sorry, Mom, I was wrong about the Holocaust.
Thank you, Diane, for that. Thank you very much. And yeah, thank you very much. So those darn Schaefer kids is what we call it, because actually we've been called that from one of the hosts on Republic Broadcasting Network called Frederick C. Blackburn, and he goes by Blackbird 9 also. And when he said that, it kind of landed well, because for new people who have never heard of us, it immediately dispels the notion that we're husband and wife, because when you talk about kids, that's siblings. So, you know, right. Automatically you think of brother, sister. Mm-hmm. So that's one part of it. And it's just kind of sort of affectionate way of talking about, you know, those darn Schaefer kids, you know, get a little bit rebellious or get a little bit trouble, you know, getting a little trouble.
A little trouble. Both of you together, holy smoke.
Yeah, so anyway, that was, thank you for that. And did anybody else want to say anything? Go ahead, Hans.
I was just saying, you're talking about how, you know, the NSDAP is depicted in the most screwball, crazy ways. What I wanted to make mention of is, like, you know, I've done teaching before, you know, at local public high school, and it's like, we had this unit talking about the quote civil rights and Emmett Till. And it's like, you know, we were watching this, you know, film about it. And it's like, it's just as bad with the white men in the South. I mean, I literally wound up laughing in front of a classroom full of kids. Like, do you really believe that, you know, white men in the South today are like this? Do you, even back in the 1930s, do you believe they were really like this? I mean, it's just, I don't know how to put it. It's just the worst foolishness. And then
I agree.
The depictions of black people in the South back then is like, were they really like that? You know, yes'm boss. It's like, no, come on. This is all just, it's just idiotic propaganda. And we know where it's coming from. We know.
So in other words, like the people of the South, the Confederate States, they've been lied about just like the Germans have been lied about. And the history has been distorted, and they've been made out to be, you know, like, I grew up with a completely different notion about people from the Southern states. I always just thought, oh, these are just a bunch of, you know, whatever, primitive hicks and just whatever. It's like we just had such a wrong history given to us. So is,
well,
that what you're
like? Yeah, they're all knuckle dragging, mouth breathing, you know.
Yes. Exactly.
I lived in the South for, you know, number of years, and it's just, you know, I've experienced, you know, traveling around the rural South quite a bit. It's like, are we supposed to really believe that they were ever like that? You know, it's just, you know, you look at these guys, they're all fat and dumb, and it's like, you know,
in the depictions you're talking
about.
Yeah,
it's like, you know, are there fat, dumb people in the South, white people in the South? Sure. But I mean, saying that, They're just feeding stereotypes.
Yes,
I agree. Mean, that's all it is.
Okay, so anything anybody want to say on, you know, the subjects that we raised in about Vincent or about anything else in of to Truth and Justice for German Society meeting? Otherwise, we could wrap it up, I think. And Diane Collins, thank you so much for, you know, your end of organizing it. And thank you all for coming and your contributions. And we will then, there are a few items that we can work on. I could transcribe, type up some of these letters. I'll look through them and put something together there.
Yeah,
that'll be another project. I might not get it done overnight because I'm very, very, very busy, Hans, but I would like to do that. I think it would be good. I think it would be good.
You can scan them or photograph them too.
Yeah.
Oh, if I scanned these, you would be willing to type them up?
No, I've got a program that basically can read JPEG files, photos, and take the text.
Really? Even if it's handwritten.
Handwritten, yeah.
Wow.
What is the program, Hans?
Adobe Acrobat.
Oh, okay. Wow.
So you could do that. I mean, like, you know, I've had people send me like just type text, but it was photographed. You just have, you know, the Acrobat go over it, then you get a transcript.
Okay. So, well, that does put a new light on it. It would not take quite as long.
Well, the other thing is, like, if, like, for instance, this French guy, what's his name again? Vincent?
Vincent Renoir.
Renoir. So anyway, what you can also do is, like, you can just photograph, the letters, and then those can also be just posted as JPEG files.
Oh yeah, that's true. That's what some people did with my letters. I do remember that because I saw them afterwards when I got out of jail. I saw that.
Yeah, so I mean, it's like it's not like this is a huge amount of work. You can just take a digital phone, like on a camera on a phone, or just a digital camera, and you can just put it down on a white table and get good light and just, you know, bing, 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 bing. Take the pictures, save them as JPEGs, and then email them.
Okay. There you go. Thank you for that. I'm glad I clarified that because I was going to do a lot more work. Oh, my goodness.
No need.
Because I'm transcribing some books that Leslie Borey wrote out of prison and sent to me, and that's a lot of work. But, oh, my goodness, that
you
program
pay transcriptionist services, too. I mean, that's... I mean, there's no doxing in your case anyway.
This is for somebody else. This is for Les Borey, you know?
Yeah, right. But I'm just saying you can just pay transcriptionists to do it and save yourself the time.
Like another human being to do this, because it's a lot of time.
Transcription services are out there, yeah.
Okay, well, maybe I'll talk to you on another time about this. It's like, holy mackerel.
You can pay somebody in the Philippines $2 or $3 US an hour to do it, too.
Mm. Yeah. I don't want to do that. and you were putting something up there. Jeffrey.
If anybody wants this file, and then you can go to Sticker Mule and have them print it up, I can send you that. And to get Truth and Justice for German stickers, I bought 300 last time, or was it? I don't know. The more you buy, the better price you get, you know. So, I think I got them down to, no, I think about 1,000, and got them down to 50 cents a piece. So
awesome,
but yeah.
That's check great. Thanks. Good
thing
to
about
do
hiring,
the promo.
The thing about hiring Americans to do the work is I had some graphic design work done recently. If you wanted to pay an American to do it, $70 an hour. You pay an Indian to do it, it's like literally a tenth the cost. But
I'm, you know, I'm just not interested in hiring somebody in India to do anything for me.
I totally understand. I'm looking at the dollars and cents side of things, though. I mean.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Okay.
Thank you.
Manfred, you got something to say? No. Greg? Nice to see you there. Just before we go, anything you want to say? We haven't heard from you.
Oh, okay. I'm just taking it all in. I wasn't at the last meeting. I've got probably about 40 or 50 of those Truth and Justice for German stickers. So I'm kind of motivated now to go around and put some up. So they're just kind
right
of
on.
Sitting, they're just sitting in my Third Reich cabinet at home. So with all my flags and paraphernalia. So I should go around town and put some up here and there, see what happens to them. And, I like Jeffrey's shirt. I think I'm going to get one for myself. And I'll wear it at select occasions. Might be a little dangerous to wear it downtown Vancouver, but I definitely want to get one. So I'll be going to the link to purchase one.
Excellent.
So, everybody happy? Can we adjourn?
Sure.
Sounds good. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for coming. Thank you for listening. Thank you for contributing. And we'll see you next time. And over and out.
Okay. Bye-bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.